This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Get more at 971talk.com.
All right, good morning to you. Welcome into the Mark Cox Morning Show. So glad you're with us. It is the Monday morning, I believe. What is it, the 16th? Wow. 16th day of December. Welcome in. T-minus 9 days, I guess you'd say, right? Till Christmas Day for those of us celebrating. And good to have everybody in this morning. Kim, how are you?
Good. I had a really good weekend. Did a lot of things. We went to Twisted Tree, which was phenomenal, as always.
My favorite. What did you have? You had which steak?
I had the filet.
All right.
I had an 8-ounce filet, and yes. I had the mashed potatoes, and we had a cheesecake and a salad. I don't know what it is about their dressing, but it's phenomenal. So that was great. Took our son to see Santa at Bass Pro Shop, and it was so funny because he, you know, ran around the house basically the rest of the time going, ho, ho, ho. It's pretty cute. And today we're doing Polar Express.
And you got your picture taken with Santa too, I saw, right?
I did, yeah. I was surprised that, but maybe that helped Easton not freak out. He didn't cry.
Yeah.
How was your weekend?
Yeah, my weekend was pretty laid back, I got to be honest with you. Got to go to a nice holiday party that was fantastic and did a little bit of Christmas shopping. I don't know why, but I ventured out to a mall, and it was a zoo. I think it bodes well for the economy. I drove past I didn't go yesterday, but I drove past the outlet malls in Chesterfield, and the parking lot was full out to the interstate. And as far as I could see over toward 109 once I got past that exit, I mean, people are turning out to these brick and mortar stores and spending a lot of money on the holidays. So it's got to be good for the economy. There's no doubt about that.
Well, yeah, because you hear about how everyone's breaking records with online shopping. But clearly, yeah, there may be that. But also people, like you said, are still going to the brick and mortar stores.
Yeah, very true. You know, always you have plenty of time to get out there. And we still got some feeling good about it. I've still got a few gifts to buy. And I'm a little up in the air on what I'm going to get, but that's just the reason that we're out there and we got some time left, and that's a good thing. Tis the season to have a little merriment and joy. We're all in a good mood. Somebody said to me this weekend, so how you been, man? I haven't seen you in a while. I'm like, listen, since about November 5th, I've been walking a little taller, feeling good, walking. You know, we got a month and 4 days till Donald Trump takes over, and I already feel like he's president, don't you?
He's acting more like a president. I mean, even him being at the Army-Navy game. By the way, did you see the lineup? What a suite to be in.
No kidding. Elon Musk, Daniel Penny was in there.
Yep.
Vance was in there.
Yep.
Trump, who else am I missing?
Those were the big ones I saw. How cool to be Daniel Penny after all he's gone through to be able to be in that suite.
Well, and you know, to me, as much as anything, further confirmation that had a jury in New York actually convicted that kid, Donald Trump was already planning to pardon him, don't you think? I mean, the fact that he made it to that booth for that game with the president and the vice president means there were already some connection there. I'll guarantee they were just waiting, and probably on, you know, January 21st, they would have pardoned him had he been convicted of that case to begin with.
I'm sure.
Yeah. That doesn't take long. There are a few people out there stirring the pot this morning. We're going to get to that in just a few minutes because one of them involves the mention of Daniel Penny. The other involves the potential third term for President Trump. And the fact that they're even willing to stir the pot like that, just I think kind of gives you a flavor of what we're in for the next 4 years. And I love it because the left must be losing its collective mind this morning. Coming up, we're going to get to Cully Stimson. He's back in this morning for Hans von Spakovsky's. He's also a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation. We'll talk a little bit more about this I don't know, among other things, this drone problem we got up on the coast and what the potential legal remedies are for some of that. You know, there's a challenge for Missouri Speaker of the House. The establishment has picked their candidate, but Justin Sparks has stood up and said, no, we need to do something different here. I'm running for Speaker. And now several large county Republican caucuses are voting in favor of, these central committees voting and endorsing Justin Sparks for that. We're going to talk to Judy Hahn from the St. Louis County Central Committee coming up here in the 7 o'clock hour this morning. But Carl Middleman, right now, let's get to our top stories.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
There's nothing political about national security, and so we are working office by office throughout this process, advise and consent with senators, and we look forward to meeting with Senator Fetterman right now.
There you go. I think that's a good thing. Pete Hegseth, they're talking about the fact that we're moving ahead. You can listen to all the media, beat me up every day if you want. But in the meantime, we're talking to these senators, and we're a step closer to a confirmation hearing.
How in the world did we lose to a billionaire or a venture capitalist when we were making the case of a county attorney and a high school teacher?
Because nobody bought it, Tim Walz, you fraud. Nobody bought it at all. How did we lose to a billionaire? He must be defined by the fact that, well, I guess Walz is admitting he's a billionaire.
Donald Trump is smarter than me, you, and yep, all critics. You know how I know? Because he has the White House, the Senate, the House, the popular vote.
I'll let that soak in for a minute. Doesn't it feel really good? Can I get a hell yeah? Doesn't it feel really good to hear Van Jones admit that on national television?
Since it doesn't actually say consecutive, that, I don't know, maybe we do it again in 28. Are you guys down for that? Trump 28!
Fresh out of jail, Steve Bannon speaking this weekend at an event for the Republicans. And he just wanted to stir the pot a little bit because all those Democrats that claim Donald Trump is going to be a dictator, he's going to try to take a third term. And nobody believes that, but Bannon knows how to take a big stick and stick it in the craw of all of these leftists, because it does say no president shall serve two consecutive terms. It does use the word consecutive. You could argue this was his third victory, but we're not going to win that argument at this point, so we'll take it as his second, but it's not consecutive. So he's just kind of jabbing him a little bit. No, nobody thinks Trump's going to do that. Even Mitt Romney this weekend admitted that J.D. Vance is the man for 28.
I think at this point J.D. Vance could probably beat Ron DeSantis. But I am curious to see if DeSantis throws his name out there again for 2028.
Yeah, DeSantis was in that box too.
You know who I thought? Who else I thought was Kash Patel there? I thought I saw him too in one of the pictures.
I don't know. All I know is the network didn't spend nearly as much time on that picture as they do when there's a certain singer in the box for a Kansas City game. They didn't cut away to that booth nearly as much. Did you notice that?
I did not watch that game. So you're saying they didn't show Taylor as much as they typically would?
No, they didn't show Trump as much as they would. They
compared to Taylor, they show her way more.
Right,
oh, that's
right.
Not a surprise. That's just sad, but not. But with little. Well, it depends on, I guess, which network's covering it.
I mean, it's true that Trump isn't actually dating a player that's in the game. Like if Kelsey, who didn't do much this weekend, I don't think. But if he caught a touchdown, the immediate reaction is to cut away to Taylor Swift and show her jumping up and down and cheering and with Mahomes' wife and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But, Carl, congratulations. The Blues won last night.
Hey, it was our new coach's first home victory. So
nice.
It's nice.
I'm glad to hear. Congratulations. And we all got popcorn because Carl worked last night.
Thank
you. Appreciate that. You'll get a nap later.
I hope so.
Maybe at some point. All right, let's get to a quick break here. Carl, who's got our national anthem this morning?
Well, Mark, Navy won this weekend.
Ah.
So it's the United States Naval Band.
All right, yeah, we were already hammered on this online this morning, but it is Beethoven's birthday, so hence you have it. Are we going to get a wide selection of Beethoven's hits today,
song?
Carl?
Yeah.
Yeah.
254, Beethoven would have been, so a zombie.
A zombie, well, basically, yes.
If he would have been alive.
Happy birthday, Beethoven.
I don't know if you guys can hear it in my voice or not. I'm feeling better, thank you. I jokingly pointed out when I went out to McAdoodles this weekend, I was looking for something to cut the phlegm out of my throat. But I got to be honest with you. I don't wish this on anybody because Wednesday will mark 2 weeks since my first symptoms of this. And I coughed my bloody head off all night last night. I took, a ZQL or whatever you call it, the nighttime cold medicine. I took a prescription pill my doctor gave me that's supposed to help control coughing. I took cough drops. I'm on antibiotics, a Cipro, to violate my HIPAA law here. I'm on Cipro. I'm finishing up a 10-day course of prednisone, and I'm still coughing like I've got black lung. I don't know what it was, what it is. I've never felt bad from start to finish, except for the fact that I cough so hard that I see stars.
Coughing in the middle of the night to the point where it's waking you up constantly has to be one of the most irritating things, probably for you and your wife.
Woo.
Poor Michelle.
Yeah.
But my friend was saying in the Connecticut area that this is just going around. People, you lose your voice, it lingers for about 2 weeks, you're coughing nonstop.
My friend Barry reached out this weekend and wanted some details on what I had been going through because he felt like he was losing his voice, couldn't clear his throat. That's kind of how it started. So it's just weird that it just lingers for so long, and I feel like I've done just about everything I could do. I've been to the doctor, I'm on some medicine for it. I've never had pneumonia, but I guess that's the next thing I'll need to rule out. But I don't feel like I'm in bad. Just don't feel bad. I think with pneumonia, you would feel bad.
I would think
maybe all the drugs you're taking are canceling each other out.
Well, no, the prednisone is for inflammation of your vocal cords, right? That's primarily why he gave it to me. And then the Cipro, I told him, I think maybe it's kind of morphed into a sinus infection. And so, I don't know. I'm doing all I can.
I'm just trying to stay healthy before the holidays.
Just hanging in there. My wife started to cough a little bit the other day, and she goes,
"Oh gosh,
you gave this to me." I'm like, well, you know, we kind of exist together here in the house. I don't know what else I can do to get further away from you.
And if you're blaming your grandchildren, she was with them too.
Well, the grandkids' symptoms haven't, I mean, they're in a perpetual state of a runny nose because they're in daycare 4 days a week, but they don't have any of these cough symptoms or anything that seems to be lingering like I've got. So I guess I wrongly accused my sweet, innocent granddaughter of sticking her fingers in my mouth and giving me whatever ick she carried home from her school, from her daycare. Ah, I'll tell you what. Kim, you were pointing out, we talked earlier about the who was in the booth last night at the football game. Trump was there, we know. Was this last night or
this was Saturday. It looked
Saturday,
like
football game.
Yeah, it looked like Cash Patel, Mike Johnson, Tulsi Gabbard.
Army Navy, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder who J.D. Vance was rooting for.
You know, I wondered about that.
The Navy.
But for real, are they expected, like Trump, for example, is he expected to kind of clap anytime anything happens because
probably.
He doesn't want to favor one over the other?
Be the commander-in-chief, right? But as a Marine, I'm assuming J.D. Vance was rooting for the Navy. I would guess.
Marines started as Army.
But they're part of the Navy.
But they started as Army.
My guess is he was rooting. I don't know for sure. I would guess he's rooting for the Navy.
You see, there was a 99-year-old veteran, I believe, who played, I think it was the national anthem, on a harmonica.
At this game?
I believe so, because I saw some woman, a veteran, singing it. But then there was a clip that was circulating around. But the problem with social media now is these clips go out public and they get shared a bunch of times. And then you have to do some serious digging and backtracking to figure out, okay, was this from a previous year that someone shared? And now it looks like it's recent, but it's really not. Or was this doctored? Or
I can't think of somebody playing something on a harmonica and not think of Stan Musial. When I went to D.C. to cover his Freedom of Metal Award that he received from Obama back in the day, he had his harmonica with him at all times. And apparently, and I saw video of it because I knew somebody who was in the room in the east wing of the White House before they brought him out for the medal ceremony. He was apparently in there playing his harmonica for all of the other people that were getting the Freedom of Metal that day. And a buddy of mine who was in there recorded some of it on his phone, and I got to listen to it.
That's
so
cool.
It's pretty awesome that he... I always think of that when I think of a harmonica.
Well, you know, not to call you out, but speaking about musical talents, Mark, you have about 2 weeks to learn to play the guitar.
Oh, thank you very much. Shouldn't take
your
long.
Your 2024 New Year's resolution. There's still time.
It was one of them, but it's not... we still got time. Don't you worry. My friend Richie's listening. He's probably limbering up his fingers right now to show me how to do that in 2 weeks or less. Shouldn't be a problem.
I have faith.
Shouldn't be a problem. Coming up, we're going to get to Kim on a whim. And a little later, we're going to talk with one of the parents, complaining about the bathroom policy in the Francis Howell School District. We'll be back.
Kim on a whim.
Well, I have a crazy story to share with you this morning. And that is, my friend was a nurse at a Connecticut hospital, and I think that's probably all I should say, detail-wise. And she tells me this story about how a couple weeks ago, 2 to 3 weeks ago, a homeless man sneaks into said said hospital, somehow manages to get a hold of scrubs, and pretended to be a doctor there at that hospital for 10 days.
What?
Was going into patient rooms and was supposedly... offering advice. She heard they were doing, this person was doing physical exams. And I'm thinking, how is this person eating? Where's this person sleeping?
Probably in the commissary, right?
She said, well, so an email went out, by the way, to the staff at this hospital letting them know that this had happened because they caught the guy. Her assumption, what she heard from other people, was that whenever the patients would have their food trays, and I guess if there was food left, he would just, you know,
eat
that.
Yeah,
and then, you know, there's so many rooms there that are probably vacant on all the floors of this hospital. This is a big hospital. He'd just sleep there, and they ended up catching him because he was found passed out in one of the rooms. And then he became a patient at the hospital where he had been pretending to be a doctor.
Why?
Is that not just so crazy that this went on? He didn't even have a badge. I mean, think about that. When you're walking into a hospital, everyone's wearing a badge, and you see him having to use it, like a key fob, where you have to use it to scan to be able to get into a different floor for security reasons. Understandably so. She said he was telling people, I'm so sorry, I forgot. If he was questioned by, say, a patient, he would just tell people, I'm so sorry, I left my badge in my office. So the fact that he got away with this for 10 days is mind-blowing to me. I've been Googling this. I can't find it anywhere. But she said she couldn't even believe it when the email went out.
They kept it quiet, is what you're saying?
Well, it's not in the media.
Well, my point is they've managed to keep it quiet. Imagine the lawsuits that are forthcoming when people realize there's a good chance that Dr. Pocum, who walked in this morning to give me my digital exam, wasn't actually a doctor.
Isn't that wild? I asked her how people wouldn't realize that this guy's never been seen before. And she says, first of all, travel nursing is such a common thing now where you have people in and out of the hospital who... they're only there for 2-3
right.
months for their contract, so
yeah.
you don't really learn the faces. And she says there's so many doctors, and they're coming in from different floors if you need a specialist or whatever, that she's like, it's easier for this to happen than you might think. So I did some Googling yesterday, and I found a case where a man did get sentenced to prison for pretending to be a doctor in California. Listen to this story.
Authorities say this man snuck into a children's hospital and pretended to be a doctor at least 7 times.
That's just mind-blowing. I can't even fathom what ramifications could come of something like that.
23-year-old Aria Kuzian allegedly wore a doctor's jacket and a stethoscope. Prosecutors say he fooled security at the Children's Hospital of Orange County by telling them he lost his medical ID. He then proceeded to walk the halls impersonating a physician, even gaining access to restricted floors.
That happened back in 2018. Some doctor. Scary stuff. He diagnosed a patient for a growth on his neck, that 23-year-old with the story you just heard about.
That really is frightening.
Oh, I know.
Here's the thing about it. The local hospitals would probably prefer you not to tell this story because, you know, I've been in and out of local hospitals many, many times. My mom is most often at Missouri Baptist, but I've certainly been over to Barnes and all as a reporter. And you're more likely to have your credential checked if they suspect you're news media than anybody else. But if you're just dressed in civilian clothes and you walk in the door and you already know the room number, you don't have to stop at the information desk. You just walk right on into the hospital. So from that perspective, their security is pretty lax. And if somebody had a medical smock on, a white smock, a doctor's coat, lab coat, and actually walked in there and looked official, you fake it till you make it. I mean, I could see that easily happening in a number of hospitals.
Side note, when you just used the word smock, it brought me back to elementary school when I would wear my smock and I would have smock. For art class. That I miss those smocks. You know, the pockets for all my crayons.
That could be where that came from. I don't know why that word popped into my head.
It could be any big business. I don't know why you would want to pretend to be an employee at a big business, but people are weird. Why would you want to pretend to be a doctor? I guess if you want to do creepy physical exams, maybe there's that weird fetish. But it's not just to say that this would happen at hospitals.
I'm just thinking out loud. I mean, I know that they have protocols for getting into the drug room. You have to know the password. I guess you could argue if you're a doctor, I'm from a different floor. What's that code again to get in here? Could probably get you access to where the drugs are. You have to be able to sign into a computer to look at the patient's medical status. But if you just picked up a bill, a board, and you're walking around with it like you know what the hell you're doing.
Right, you're wearing the doctor's coat. You're wearing your stethoscope. You look confident.
Look like you have a God complex and walk around there like you know what you're doing,
right.
And nobody's going to question you.
I don't think people would question you. I don't know where this person in the Connecticut hospital case, where he got the scrubs. I guess they just have them laying around on floors
sure,
in case you need
spare
scrubs.
Sure, they're probably all over the place. Yeah.
Just
yeah.
picks up the scrubs and puts them on. No
which,
questions
which
asked.
Which were probably dirty from some other patient's room that the person was in, and he didn't care.
I just, when she told me the story.
What town was this in? You don't want to say?
I don't know if I should say.
Okay.
Because it's, like I said, I cannot find this story online. And I did some serious digging over the weekend for this because I about fell out of my chair when my friend told me this. Just because I think I put myself in the patient's position after you realize that this happened. And you're thinking, oh my gosh, the person who just gave me that advice or was talking to me or doing a physical exam on me is some random dude, some homeless guy from the street. Not even a doctor. This just absolutely
like the last
kills
name of the person
happens.
That told you this was not Stephanopoulos, right?
No, not Stephanopoulos.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
But there could be perhaps a $15 million lawsuit that would. Wasn't it $15 million lawsuit or an agreement that ABC has said, okay, we'll pay
yes.
that. It's part of the settlement.
Yeah, but my point is, let's assume that for a moment we're just going to assume that this went on for 10 days, like this. Like your friend told you, if it goes public and this thing blows up there, hospitals around the country will immediately have to change their policy. Like, staff members will have to always show an ID when they walk into the hospital. Probably every person that visits a hospital will have to stop at the information desk and identify themselves and say which room they're going to. I mean,
don't you think that should have happened after this 2018 case where the person was able to pretend to be a doctor for 7 days? And it sounds like this guy in California was able to leave the hospital and come back. The homeless guy, from everything I understand, was sleeping there. Wasn't leaving. Probably wanted a warm place to stay.
Now, I could see doing it just, you know, sort of a prank on you have a good friend who's in there and you walk in, you have your smock on, you put a fake beard on and walk out and tell the nurse, this guy needs an enema. I need you to do that stat.
He wants it right now.
I'll be back in a week.
That would be the worst prank ever.
Oh my gosh. That really is that is some frightening stuff right
I know.
There. Oh man.
Reminded me of the movie, my sister was actually mentioning this, that movie Catch Me If You Can with Leonardo DiCaprio, where that was based on a real story, though, right? Where this guy, he was a pilot and was an attorney, but never even passed the bar, was able to do all of these things and convince people that he was, you know, qualified for that role. And he had done none of it.
He
had no credentials. And it just goes to show you that if you carry that confidence and you walk in kind of like, I own this space, I'm here for a reason, people often don't question you.
Yeah, we should all be very afraid. That last year, you're all now thinking back to the last time you were in the hospital and that hospitalist came in you've never laid eyes on. And
ma'am, we needed
wondering.
To strip down, please. We needed to do a head-to-toe physical exam.
Oh, that's scary. That is some frightening stuff. All right, how many of you know who Stephen A. Smith is? Have you heard of him, the sportscaster? He does his own. He might have a podcast on the Odyssey platform somewhere, for all I know. He has been traditionally quite the leftist, but what he said yesterday, he's starting to come around, I think. I'll play some of what he said for you yesterday when we come back here. Stay tuned.
You know what I'm getting to the Democratic Party? You know what I'm getting really pissed off about? I'm getting really ticked off at every time they open their mouth about something pertaining to y'all, they seem right.
Yeah, that's Stephen A. Smith, and he's a little pissed off, and he's mad because Stephen's always been a Democrat. And he's listening to the media now reporting, despite all of the questions about to Chris Wray and all the others about how many agents did you have on the ground on January 6th? I can't answer that question. How many informants did you have on the ground January 6th? I can't answer that question. Why wouldn't that be a key question? Because it gets back to the old White House question of the Nixon years. What did they know and when did they know it? They had, we now find out, 26 informants on the ground for January 6th.
Some of whom actually went in.
Some who violated law. None of them were ever tried or charged in those cases because they were government informants. Maybe they didn't do a great job of informing, but they knew what was coming, and you can bet somebody in the government knew what was coming. I've said this all along. There's no question that they not only did they see this coming, but that they intentionally did nothing to stop it. They did nothing to stop it. The last thing they wanted was anything that would delay a potentially or block a potentially embarrassing situation for Donald Trump or Donald Trump supporters. That's it at the bottom of the end of the day. Like, so I go to this Christmas event. I told you I went to a private party on Saturday evening. Very nice place. And I'm having a conversation with a couple who's there who I've been acquainted with for a while. At least the man, because he's a local elected official. And, you know, I've had some differences with him over that period of time. And the wife says to me, well, you know, I guess I'm glad that Trump won. I had some heat because I didn't see there was any other choice who to vote for. But I just can't believe January 6th ever happened. I'm just sickened by that. I'm like, man, it's interesting you say that. Let's dig into that a little bit. Why is that? Well, those people that went there, they had no business being there. And I'm like, I was there. Oh, you were there? I'm like, I'm the only member of the St. Louis media who was in D.C. that day. I was reporting on it on this radio station, on my radio show, on Annie Fry's radio show, on Facebook Live, on the Glover show later that afternoon as I was walking back to my hotel room, on Channel 4 that same night. I was in D.C. reporting on what I'd seen when I was there. I'm like, you have completely bought into the media hysteria and the Democrat left lies over what January 6th was and wasn't. It was never an insurrection. It was a riot started by a small handful of people that a few others got waltzed into, sucked into. Well, how do you know that? She says to me. I'm like, because I was there. So this is, you know, that documentary, Kim, that we had the producer of that documentary on, who claimed that he was doing an unbiased, you know, there was, because there was, he called it a documentary, but there was no track on it. There was nobody walking you through these events. And he claimed that because of that, it was a more honest picture of what happened on January 6th. But it wasn't. It was a very biased documentary that started following the Stop the Steal organizers right after the election ended, right? Who started questioning why 400,000 votes came in the middle of the night in some of these precincts, and why nobody looked into that, and what's the chain of custody, and who are these people, and why did we rubber stamp this without answering more questions? It focused on those folks for the 5 weeks or 6 weeks leading up to, what was more than that, leading up to January 20th, which is, or January 6th, I should say. And it unveiled the truth about all of this. The federal government had these informants in all of these groups. They had news photographers embedded with them. They weren't trying to hide anything because this guy had all of the audio. There's no way the FBI, the Capitol Police, all of them didn't know what was about to happen that day. They were there several days in advance planning and talking about the possibility of trying to kick in a door and break into Congress that day. They knew about it. And so what I said to the lady was, listen, I was at the Ellipse listening to the president's speech. The president's speech ended at 12:30, 12:40. It started late. We didn't leave to walk to the Capitol building until the speech ended. The people at the Capitol had already been there and were fighting with police and had kicked down barriers and were breaching doors before the main crowd ever left the Ellipse to walk down the street. We know the truth of what happened that day. And all these years later, it's just now that people like Stephen A. Smith have awakened to it because we finally got a little bit of truth. Well, guess what? When Kash Patel takes over the FBI, we're going to find out a whole lot more. And I, for one, cannot wait for that to happen. Coming up, we'll get to our friend Cully Stimson, get you a check of business at about 6:35.
Get more at 971talk.com.